Logic dictates that given their extremely high level of technical development...
Well, it's too technical to explain to the lay mind.
Welcome to Talking Technicals here on Money Life, where it is definitely not too technical to explain to the lay mind, even when we are working with a guest like my guest today. John Kosar is Chief Market Strategist at Asbury Research. You can go to asburyresearch.com to learn about the firm and their research. You can go to asburyresearch.substack.com if you want to learn more about some of the stuff they're putting out. And they have a YouTube channel that you can find as well. But it's not too technical, in spite of the fact that one of the cool things about John is that he is a market technician, but he uses a lot of data, which a lot of folks do, and he uses quantitative models that give an interesting read going forward. Forward-looking research is what everybody wants when you're going to be talking technicals. What do I think is going to happen next? What I love about John's research is no-nonsense, kind of straightforward. We're risk on, we're risk off. Here's where we're at, and let's go. Again, if you want to learn more about it, asburyresearch.com. John Kosar, welcome back to Money Life.
Thank you, Chuck. Good to be here.
Let's start with the picture right now. Are you risk on or risk off in this market, given how much we've seen the recovery from everything that happened in April after Liberation Day?
We have been risk on since April the 23rd, and we are still that way now. The S&P 500 is bumping up against its all-time high. We're squeaking out to a new all-time high in the NASDAQ 100, which is the larger of the two in terms of market cap. Yeah, just amazingly enough, if you turn the sound off of the news, you know, and follow the data, it's been overall strong for months.
I want to go back to that April date, because when were you risked off? Because the one thing no one could forecast this year was what we were going to wind up getting and what occurred on Liberation Day and the shocks it sent through the market. So if you were risk off as we got to Liberation Day, it wasn't because of, oh, I don't know what the president's going to do and what's going to be proposed on tariffs. It had to be about conditions, correct?
Yeah. We first went to risk off on the way down. The market peaked on February. I'm looking at it now on February the 19th. That was the intraday all-time high in the S&P 500. We initially went risk off in our Asbury 6, which is a tactical risk on and risk off model. We initially went risk off 2 days after that on February the 21st. Now, we didn't stay risk off from that time all the way till April the 23rd. We went back to risk on for a brief period in the latter part of March, but only lasted about a week or so, and then we were right back to risk off. So the Asbury 6 model is meant to be agile. It's meant to be sensitive, but it does an extremely good job of trying to control the drawdown. For example, during the COVID collapse was February and March of 2020. The S&P was down 34% during that short period. Asbury 6 was only down 4.7% because it got out of the way. So it is active. If there's a downside to the Asbury 6, is that it's active. It's very sensitive. It's kind of like a EKG for the stock market. But again, it went back to risk on April the 23rd, and it had a little bout where it almost turned the other way once or twice, but it's currently risk on. Five of the six constituent metrics that are within the Asbury 6 are all green. They're all positive.
Let's dig into that a little bit. So the Asbury 6, there are six different components. We need to, A, go a little further in defining risk on and risk off, because does that mean we are sanguine on the market, or does that mean we are in the market fully and out of the market fully? And then what are the six basic components? Give us a definition. And how common is it for us to have five of them being green?
The six include volatility, relative performance, volume, and some other indicators. But the thought behind it was, I've been doing this for over 40 years. The last decade, just kind of incrementally, the day-to-day volatility in the S&P 500 has just gotten more and more and more, just a lot more jumpy. It used to be very rare to see the market up 50 in the morning and down 50 the next day. And now it's almost ho-hum. You know, people see it and they're just kind of used to it. So I needed to build a quantitatively driven, a data-driven way to determine what day-to-day health of the stock market was, because I couldn't tell by looking at the S&P 500 and like a stochastic or a MACD or one of the canned indicators that most people look at. I needed to get more of a, that's why I call it an EKG of the market. It's not something that you could see readily. You need to kind of, you know, look beyond the surface to be able to see what's going on in somebody's heart. And this is kind of what this does for us. So that's why we built it. And I don't recall what your other question was, so maybe you can reiterate that.
How frequently do we get full risk on all six are green? What happens when we're 3-3? And do we normally transition where we go full risk on to risk off, or where we take an interim step?
We backtested this model a number of different ways. We backtested it incrementally, where each of the six was 1/6 of being fully invested. Many other ways to try to see what gave us the best results. And what did was when there are four or more green or positive constituents, that is risk on. And when there are four or more that are have turned bearish or turned red, that is risk off. The way we backtested it was with a hypothetical $100,000 portfolio. And when we're risk on, we are in SPY with, you know, the whole 100K. And when we're risk off, we just go to cash. So we tried to make it as least complicated as possible by just keeping it binary. You know, you're either in the S&P or you're not.
In terms of patterns that you've seen before, or how long do you typically stay risk on once the market gets to new highs? Because what most market technicians have been waiting for, it's not just a return to new highs, but they've been waiting for proof that this rally can hold. And they've been saying, you got to set new highs for us to really believe that this is a true rally with legs and it can continue and all that sort of stuff. So if we are looking at a rally that is getting to that level and hopefully will get to where we set new highs, generally, how long do you stay green?
There is no generally there. All we're doing is we're, you know, there's not. I don't think there's any meaning for that. All we're doing is we're checking kind of under the hood of the market and making sure that these six indicators are telling us the market's healthy, rather than staring at the S&P 500 as it bounces up and down. I would comment, though, for those technicians that were saying you had to wait till we made fresh highs in order to indicate that, you know, this is sustainable. In the meantime, since April the 23rd, they've missed a 14% rally. So I don't know that that's the right approach, which is why we look at it through a more of a tactical lens. I don't want to wait, you know, 15% until it's safe to go on the market. It's hard to pick up 14%. It's especially hard to pick it up in 2 months, which is what we've done by being, positive or risk on in the Asbury 6 for the past couple of months. So, no, I don't think there is anything to be gleaned by how long, the model indicates a positive bias by how many days it stayed up above the new highs. It's not really what we're looking for. I want to know when the internal health of the market is good, and I want to jump on that as fast as I can so I can catch as much of the move as possible, rather than waiting for some benchmark that, you know, is 10% up above the market. In the meantime, I'm wasting an opportunity to make some money.
And does that also mean that, like, asking you for targets is not really where you're going to go, because the target is meaningless to you? It's more what the market can do. I mean, is there a measure where the Asbury 6 is telling you at this point how much room it thinks we have to run here?
No, it doesn't do that. There are other technical tools that do that. Chart patterns, or you could, after you break a trend line, you might be able to make a upside projection to some other level using more classical technical analysis techniques. But again, you know, the Asbury 6 and the other models that we've built are not forecasting. Forecasting to me is a euphemism for guessing. You know, you just don't know. Things change every day. I mean, just look at the past couple of months with the tariffs. They're on, they're off, they're big, they're small. How do you handicap that? You know, you really can't. So what we do is we look at the market every day, and based on our models, we can tell what the market thinks, what the investors, the people with skin in the game, what they think of the condition of the market. And as long as they like it, as is indicated by our model, then we're in. So, you know, for example, the maximum drawdown in the S&P 500 during the 7.5 years that we've gone back with the back test of the Asbury 6 was 34%. The maximum drawdown in the Asbury 6 has been 6.5%. So just a fraction. But again, it is pretty active. Some, it trades annualized, going back 7.5 years, annualized, it's has 11 round turns a year. So for some investors, that might be too busy. But, you know, the payoff on that is that the drawdowns are so much smaller. Since Q4 of 2017, I'm just looking at some data here, there has been 1,942 trading days. The A6 has been, performance line in the Asbury 6 has been above the S&P 500 in 1,668 of those, or 80% of the time. So 80% of the time since the inception of the backtest in Q4 of 2017 through just a couple of days ago, it's been up above the S&P 500 about 85% of the time. And again, with just a fraction of the risk on the downside, Sharpe ratio is much better. Standard deviation goes down to 10.3 from 17.4 in the S&P. The beta is only 0.46. So that's kind of what we're looking for. I'm an older investor. Many of my customers are older investors. You know, they're over 50. They're not really betting on crypto, but rather they're trying to take what the market gives them without having to suffer the big drawdowns, especially as they get into their 60s and into their retirement. So what we're trying to do is play the game with less risk.
Well, obviously, nobody's going to be right 100% of the time. But what impresses me about that research is that since you're trying to be forward-looking, you know that when you go risk off, if you're risk on now and the market's got a good run, that you're trying to get out early, which means in that transition period, when you first get out, the market may still be running. So you know that there are going to be times as you're making the transition that you're trying to lead the market, that you'd be behind the market until they catch up with your thinking, right?
The market inherently goes up. It's been doing that for over 100 years. So the way that I look at markets, the question isn't when do I buy, but rather when do I get out of the way? The fastest way to get in front of the market in your portfolio is if you can avoid the downside. Like I said, during COVID, the S&P 500 dropped 34%. The Asbury 6 was out of the market before we had a 5% loss. So getting back into the market with only 5% drawdown instead of a 34% drawdown, you know, getting back into the market somewhere near the lows, you know, that's where you gain on the market, is by avoiding the downside, because the market inherently goes up. It's, we're not going to sit here and wonder if the market's going to be up over the next 3 years, because history tells us that that is very likely. Where you can make your gains in the market is by avoiding the drawdowns, and that's kind of what we focus on.
And again, right now, drawdowns, while you always worry about them, this is a market that's green lights to you. You're not worried about them now.
Right now. But the other thing to consider is from the bottom on April the 7th, the market has risen by 27% in just a few months. That's awfully high very quickly. At some point here, we're going to have some kind of a mean reversion, and it's likely to be nasty because we went up so fast. That is where our models really do well. Let's say, hypothetically, we draw down 15% off of these highs, and we're out of the market after 4 or 5%, and then we buy somewhere near the lows. Again, you know, that's when you get the, you know, dramatic pickup in your P&L, is by avoiding the downside, you know, keeping your drawdowns low. Yes, to answer your question, for right now, we're green. You know, we're positive. The model is updated every day, 2 hours after the close, in the research center of our website at AsburyResearch.com. When that tells me that the market is weakened internally, the A6 will go to cash and will stay in cash until it tells us to get back in.
It's a fascinating model, and particularly in these times. John, love getting the perspective. Thanks so much for joining me again on the show. We'll talk to you down the line.
Thanks, Chuck. Appreciate it.
That's John Kosar, Chief Market Strategist at Asbury Research. Learn more about the Asbury 6 and all they do at asburyresearch.com. Again, asburyresearch.substack.com. And look for them on YouTube if you want to see more of what they are doing. If you want to see more of Money Life, you don't have to do anything. Just settle back, relax. There's more to go on today's show. And we'll get to it right after this message.